to me. Oh, oh,
live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, here to talk about issues that empower us. Later on in today's program, we're going to be speaking with Professor Mary Holland and Kim Mack Rosenberg, and we're going to discuss putting the human papillomavirus vaccine on trial. I do not tell people, never have, don't vaccinate. I simply provide information that challenges the legitimacy of the safety and efficacy of vaccine. But I also believe in freedom of choice. And I believe if a person believes truly that a vaccine would help prevent a disease for them or their children, they have every right to try that. But what we've seen are millions upon millions of parents now stating that, well, they tried, it didn't work, and so what to do? And now they become victims, and yet their voices are virtually unheard. There's no form currently in the United States that provides access to any form of remedial outcome. If your child is injured, the first thing that's going to happen is the doctor will say it wasn't the vaccines, as will the nurse, as will the pharmacist. Must have been some other environmental cause or genetic cause for all the children now diagnosed that never before were diagnosed with things such as autism spectrum disorder and minimal brain dysfunction. As a result of this, you have to go through a torturous process to get any form of recognition from the federal government. It is not easy. And because, in effect, our Justice Department is trying to defend the vaccine makers, and you have to prove, the burden of proof is on you, that the damage that you're claiming came from a single or multiple vaccine. Not easy to do. In spite of that, the government has given out more than $4 billion in awards. These are not necessarily large awards for people who can claim that they've received damage from vaccine. So today, in the second part of our program, we're going to speak with two of the leading advocates for citizen rights, parents' rights, and children's rights, and especially involving the human papilloma vaccine. Now, we did a whole special on this. I did a whole multi-award-winning documentary on this called The Silent Epidemic. And in fact, I've done five documentaries on vaccines and published over 52 articles. You can review these vaccines articles on PRN.fm, and as well as see the documentaries and judge for yourself. So that's that part of the program. But later on, I'm also going to go to part two of looking at Wikipedia and how it's been weaponized, in my opinion, and that of other journalists, to target people based upon what they don't like about you. And based upon their own rules, they violate all those rules in the process. And of course, we always deal with the latest in health and healing information. And also today, a brainwashed nation counterpunch, Barton Kunstler. So we like to get into heavy issues. Plus, we also have some audio clips. And one is very good because it simply is Robert Reich. Now, he has his own political bias, and I don't agree with everything he says, but I reviewed the 20 points he's saying, meaning 20 promises that Trump made consistently and how he's broken every one of those promises. I reviewed it. He is correct. So at least on this, I would say, yes, the information is accurate. So that's what we're going to do today. But I'm going to do something a little different. I know a lot of people have questions and a lot of people have insights, especially since we've now done 12 separate original in-depth investigative reports on the subject of Wikipedia and how they're protected from lawsuits until now. They can virtually do and say anything they want and get away with it. Much like many of the people in the media can say anything, no matter how disingenuous, no matter how inaccurate it is, they get away with it. In fact, I was just thinking about this morning. Can anyone in this audience name me the members of the CIA, National Security Agency, any of the Pentagon, any of the national agencies that have been involved in breaking the law. For example, Operation COINTELPRO, when they tried to set up Martin Luther King and infiltrated all of the black movements in America and actually facilitated crimes, bombings. Tell me which person was brought to justice. Now tell me which president was held accountable in an international tribunal for crimes against humanity for invading sovereign nations that pose no threat to anyone, like Iraq, and caused the death of over 1 million people and the destruction and displacement. How about Libya? Can anyone in this audience prove with actual documentation that Libya and Gaddafi represented a threat to any other country and therefore should have been destroyed? If you can, please share it with us. I'd like to hear it, because I cannot find such documents. We've been looking. In fact, right now we are recreating what Libya was like from historians who will show you that for decades, Libya was the Paris of Africa, and we'll be presenting this with film footage and archival footage, with interviews from people who lived there all for their lives, and what it was actually like, and how surprised they were when all this falseness, these lies, fake news occurred about how Gaddafi, who had already been out of power for 4 years, no one could get it right. And shame on the journalists who've won Pulitzer Prizes at the New York Times or Washington Post, who sided with the administration. That's ideological lying. And today, ideological lying is everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. If you're a scientist that receives money from the sugar industry, you're never going to say that sugar's harmful. You'll try to say we need more studies. It's incomplete. Those are not really well-designed studies to show that it does cause cancer, heart disease, or diabetes. Everyone's lying for someone today, it seems, in an official position or corporate position. As a result, nothing is changing, unless a person's motivated enough on their own to change. So instead of starting off today with just health and nutrition, I want to start off by having you call in and share your points of view. If you have any issues to raise about the investigations we're doing on Wikipedia, what has this informed you of, on vaccines, on any of the major issues we take on, I'm giving you a chance, a broad spectrum. If you've gained new awarenesses, new insights, our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But before, while you're thinking about what you'd like to say when you call in, I also, and by the way, did you hear last night's show? Wow. Wow, wow, wow. If you didn't hear it, I will play it next week for the people who don't have internet. But if you did listen last night, a lot of people did, then you heard an insider, a member of the inside elite, an extremely educated person who sits with people at the Pentagon, the Defense Department, the National Security Agency, presidents of companies and countries. He is a universal traveler, welcomed everywhere. And he said things not even Guy McPherson said about imminent upcoming wars over food and water and what's going to happen when the poor can't eat, then they're going to rebel. A whole, and how it's happening, and then geoengineering. So, got a lot of feedback on last night's program. You'll be hearing more from people who have that knowledge. Yet, why isn't he interviewed in the New York Times in the front page or a whole Sunday magazine section? This is stuff that will scare people because it's true. Now, we either accept that we can handle it and then do everything humanly possible to create solutions, which we could, or we deny it's important to us because today I'm not being affected by a hurricane, a tidal wave, a tsunami, an earthquake, nothing. I'm fine. I got all the food I want. I'm fine. That kind of hubris doesn't have a happy ending. And those endings are happening right now. I just spoke with people. I'm filming. Later today I'm filming about the red tide down in Florida. Professors are we're going out on the water, and we're going to see that there are dead manatees, dead dolphins, and then you start coming in. We're talking about 3 to 4 miles out. And then you start coming in, and then it gets worse and worse and worse. So what's being done to change it? How about absolutely positively nothing? So what's this going to do to all those people, Marco Island? That was one of the, Naples, Marco Island was the number one sought after place to live for the last 13 years. Marco Island is nothing but canals. That's all it is. And now red tide is in those canals. Chemicals are in those canals. Dead fish, the smell, toxins in the air. Home prices are plummeting. All up and down the beach. $6 million for a sliver of land. Then what you build on it separate. Who's going to want to live there? Because this is the new normal. This isn't a one-time off and then everything goes back to being pristine and clear. Try walking up a beach where you got all the dead fish in front of you. And the smells are overwhelming. So that's what I'm doing today. And I'll be sharing some of this footage prior to it going into the final film, just to keep you in the loop of all the different places we're going, what we're filming. So think about what you'd like to call in and speak about. Our talk back number is 888-874-4888. But we're going to play Robert Reich challenging Donald Trump on 20 things that he promised that got him elected, and he broke his promise. And think about this. Would Donald Trump have even had a chance in hell of getting elected if the liberal and democratic community over the last 30 years had to honor all their promises to de-ghettoize America, to increase the standard of living, increase the minimum wage, to have stopped the incarceration on drugs, to gotten rid of the war on drugs, to have not allowed Citizens United, to have stopped all the lobbyists, to have stopped the militarization of everything, the police and asset forfeiture, to have closed down the military bases when they had the power to do so. They didn't. So for everyone who thinks that somehow a group of redneck, racist, misogynist, Islamophobic idiots are the ones that caused Donald Trump to be elected, boy, are you tone deaf. I'm all over this country. I speak with people who were once lifetime Democrats and liberals who will never again vote Democratic because of how they've been lied to and betrayed. Unionist also. But people in New York, for somehow, in Los Angeles, they just don't get it. They think it's Trump and Trump only. It's not. The Democrats are as equally responsible for Trump's election as anyone else. And before you go casting aspersions on these deplorables, these people you consider lowlifes, why don't you come out and interview some of them? Why don't you see what it's like being in their shoes? And then ask yourself, do these people need these epithets? Or is this just one more way that a completely corrupt system maintains power? I'm Gary Knoll. We're just introducing the show a little differently today. Now we're going to Robert Reich.
1 year in, here are 20 broken promises to you Trump voters. Number one, he told you he'd cut your taxes and that the super rich like him would pay more.
I think there's very little benefit for people of wealth.
You bought it. But his new tax law does the opposite. By 2027, according to the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, the richest 1% will have got 83% of the tax cut, and the richest 0.1%, 60% of it. But more than half of all Americans, 53%, will pay more in taxes. As Trump told his wealthy friends at Mar-a-Lago just days after the tax bill became law, you all just got a lot richer. Number two, he promised to close
special interest loopholes that have been so good for Wall Street investors, but unfair to American workers.
Especially the notorious carried interest loophole for private equity, hedge fund, and real estate partners. You bought it. But the new tax law keeps the carried interest loophole. Number three, he told you he'd repeal Obamacare and replace it with something
beautiful.
You bought it. But he didn't repeal, and he didn't replace. Just as well, his plan would have knocked at least 23 million Americans off health insurance, including many of you. Instead, he's doing what he can to cut it back and replace it with nothing. The new tax law will result in 13 million people losing health coverage, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Number four, he told you he'd invest $1 trillion in our nation's crumbling infrastructure. You bought it. But after his giant tax cut for corporations and millionaires, there's no money left for infrastructure. Number five, he said he'd drain the Washington swamp.
We are going to drain the swamp in Washington, D.C.
You bought it. But he's brought into his administration more billionaires, CEOs, and Wall Street moguls than in any administration in history to make laws that will enrich their businesses. And he's filled departments and agencies with former lobbyists, lawyers, and consultants who are crafting new policies for the same industries they recently worked for. Number six, he said he'd use his business experience to whip the White House into shape. You bought it. But he has created the most dysfunctional, backstabbing White House in modern history and has already fired and replaced so many assistants, one of them hired and fired in a little more than a week, that people there barely know who's in charge of what. Number seven, he told you he'd bring down drug prices.
We are going to get drug prices, prescription drug prices, way down.
By making deals with drug companies, you bought it. But now the White House says that promise is inoperative. Number eight, he promised a complete ban on foreign lobbyists raising money for American elections. You bought it. But foreign lobbyists are still raising money for American elections. Number nine, he told you,
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid.
You bought it. But he and House Speaker Paul Ryan are already planning such cuts in order to deal with a ballooning deficit created in part by the new tax law for corporations and the rich. Number 10, he promised 6 weeks of paid maternity leave to any mother with a newborn child whose employer does not provide the benefit.
We can provide 6 weeks of paid maternity leave to any mother with a newborn child whose employer does not provide the benefit.
You bought it, but the giant tax cut for corporations and the rich doesn't leave any money for this. Number 11, he said that on day one,
we are going to label China a currency manipulator.
You bought it. But then he met with China's president, Xi Jinping, and declared China is not a currency manipulator. Ever since then, Trump has been cozying up to Xi. Number 12, he said he wouldn't bomb Syria. You bought it. Then he bombed Syria. Number 13, he said he'd build a wall across the southern border. You believed him. But Chief of Staff John Kelly says it's unlikely that we will build a wall, a physical barrier, from sea to shining sea. Number 14, he promised that the many women who accused him of sexual misconduct will be sued after the election is over.
All of these liars will be sued after the election is over.
You bought it. He hasn't sued them, presumably because he doesn't want the truth to come out. Number 15, he said he would not be a president who took vacations.
I promise you, I will not be taking very long vacations if I take them at all. There's no time for vacation.
And he called Barack Obama the vacationer in chief. You bought it. But since becoming president, he has spent nearly 25% of his days at one of his golf properties for some portion of the day, according to Golf News Network, at a cost to taxpayers of over $77 million. That's already more taxpayer money on vacations than Obama cost in the first 3 years of his presidency. Not to mention all the money taxpayers are spending protecting his family, including his two sons who travel all over the world on Trump business. Number 16, he said he'd force companies to keep jobs in America and that there would be consequences for companies that shipped jobs abroad.
Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore.
Yeah, right.
Without consequences. Not going to happen.
But you believed him. But despite their promises, Carrier, Ford, GM, and the rest have continued to ship jobs to Mexico and China. Carrier, a division of United Technologies, has moved ahead with plans to send 1,000 jobs at its Indiana plant to Mexico. Notwithstanding, the federal government has rewarded United Technologies with 15 new contracts since Trump's inauguration. GE is sending jobs to Canada. IBM is sending them to Costa Rica, Egypt, Argentina, and Brazil. There have been no consequences for sending all these jobs overseas. Number 17, he promised to revive the struggling coal industry and bring back thousands of lost coal mining jobs. You bought it. But coal jobs continue to disappear. Since Trump's victory, at least six plants that relied on coal have closed or announced they will close. Another 40 are projected to close during the president's four-year term. Utilities continue to switch to natural gas instead of coal, and renewable energy is cheaper than ever. Number 18, he promised to protect steel workers.
We will put new American steel into the spine of our country.
But according to the American Iron and Steel Institute, which tracks shipments, steel imports were 19.4% higher in the first 10 months of 2017 than in the same period the year before. That import surge has hurt American steelworkers, who are already struggling against a glut of cheap Chinese steel. Number 19, he said he'd make America safer. You believed him. But according to Mass Shooting Tracker, there were 427 mass shootings in 2017, including 58 people killed and hundreds injured at a concert in Las Vegas, and 26 churchgoers killed and 20 injured at a church in Texas. Trump refuses to consider any gun control legislation. Number 20, he said he'd release his taxes.
I'm under a routine audit, and it'll be released, and as soon as the audit's finished, it'll be released.
He said during the campaign, he hasn't released his taxes.
So those are some legitimate concerns, and especially for people who believe everything that has been said by Trump during his campaign. In point of fact, the biggest screw-up, in my opinion, is giving a tax break to the corporations that already were making massive amounts of profit, but not sharing that profit by increasing the standard of living and the daily wages of their own employees. Instead, most of it, over $1 trillion collectively, was spent buying back their own stock, what is considered treasury stock, meaning if they buy back stock in their own company, it dilutes the amount that's in the marketplace, therefore increasing its value. That's a good move. Also, remember, these corporations were not paying ever their fair share of taxes because they were using the system that has tens of thousands of pages of how they can get out of paying taxes. Now, you and I don't have that ability. They do. So then here is the question. What happens when 10 of the Fortune 500 corporations paid no taxes whatsoever, made billions of dollars in profits, and then they park profits into the trillions of dollars collectively overseas because it's a greater advantage to them? So we should never have given a tax break to any of these people. If you want to give a tax break, give it to the small business persons, because at the end of the day, they're the ones most likely to support their local communities. They're not making the millions or hundreds of millions or billions, and they're hiring and employing more people than the federal and state governments combined, yet they didn't get any advantage. So you see, it's just one boondoggle after another, and we'll keep reminding you of some of the glaring mistakes. Now to health and nutrition. Teenagers who eat the standard Western diet found to have increased risk of mental health challenges. Now, this was from the University of Tasmania, which is in Australia. So the notion that the Western diet is not ideal, that we all know, at least people listening to this program, and that the standard dietary habits in the United States and other westernized nations have been linked to major diseases, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, obesity, and mental health. New research has shown that for teenagers in particular, the average American diet could be even stronger in its recipe for disaster, especially when it comes to mental health. This was done at the University of Tasmania and the Menzies Institute for Medical Research, and they took a careful look at the diet, the connection between the diet and depression in teenagers, and they found it's there. So look at the average teenager diet, loaded with caffeine, which is an overstimulant, also imbalancing many of the body's natural hormones and pH balance, creating a more acidic environment, destroying a lot of good probiotics, and therefore laying the ground for more harmful probiotics in the body, bacteria, I should say, and poor digestive habits, overeating at a given meal, and almost always wrong combinations, and having way too much animal protein in these supersized meals, and way too much refined carbohydrate, and buns and pretzels and pieces, the things that are common. Lots of sugar, leading to an epidemic of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but also affecting the brain. Quote, a Western dietary pattern associated with an increased risk of mental health problems, including depressive symptoms in adolescence, through biologically plausible pathways of inflammation, which you do not see in a healthy diet. From Martin Luther University and the Max Rubner Institute in Germany, cacao, C-O-C-O-A, well, now we know it's loaded with polyphenols, good for your heart, good for your blood, good for preventing stroke, but also they found that it's loaded with vitamin D. And we know that brittle bones put you at risk of increased risk of respiratory disease can result in vitamin D deficiency. And so cacao gives you a good amount of vitamin D, 2 and 3. So just one more good reason to have healthy chocolate. From the University of Illinois, published in Frontiers in Psychology, schoolyard tree cover predicts math performance in high-poverty urban schools. I just was watching a video came across called The Drugging of Our Children. This is about 12 years old. And in it, I was outside of a playground on the Upper West Side, and there weren't any trees there. And I was suggesting that we need green space for children. And wouldn't it be nice if the city of New York took part of Central Park on both the east side, the west side, the north side, and the south side, and built a playground for children so that teachers could take the students there during the day, in season, so they could be outside, someplace that was reserved just for students and teachers. So what this study showed was, what if improving academic performance in some of the nation's most disadvantaged and lowest achieving schools was as easy as planting trees in the schoolyard? Now, of course, there are a lot of other mitigating factors, but a new study from the University of Illinois suggests school greening could be part of the solution. So the more trees, the more time a kid has for recess to play, the healthier they're going to be, the better they're going to do. And by the way, if you doubt this, look at the academic curriculum in Denmark, the Netherlands, and all of the Baltic states. Lots of time outside. In the United States, almost no time outside. So we need greening, and we need kids playing, and we need kids not studying, but looking at nature and interrelating with one another in order to help them grow. For men suffering from erectile dysfunction, Erasikhan University in Turkey published an article in the International Brazilian Journal of Urology showing that you can have erectile dysfunction because you have a lower melatonin level. Now, this is the first time I've seen this type of study. And, of course, melatonin is what your pineal gland secretes at night so that you're going to be healthier. But if you wake up, if you wake up two or three times a night, you're not going to secrete the same amount of melatonin. And if you drink coffee when you wake up in the morning, you'll frequently flush melatonin out of your system. Not good. It's a diuretic, remember. So just start, if you have erectile dysfunction, try taking a glass of beet juice in the morning and a melatonin 1 to 3 milligrams in the evening. See if that helps you. And finally, from University of in Nigeria, papaya reduces cadmium-induced brain damage. This was published in the European Journal of Medicinal Plants, And it talked about how this delicious, inexpensive fruit, papaya, helps prevent brain damage caused by cadmium toxicity. Your cadmium's, of course, it's a known carcinogen. It's a known neurotoxin. In point of fact, this specific heavy metal is notorious for intensifying oxidative damage in the nervous system, thereby increasing your risk of various diseases and illnesses, particularly those related to the brain. So people who smoke, not only are they damaging their brain, but their children who inhale that secondhand smoke also because of the cadmium. So that's the latest on health and healing. Plus, we shared that with you. We have one caller on the line right now, and let's go over and say hello to Ivan from New York. Hi, Ivan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up? How can we help you?
So originally when I called, I was calling because I married somebody from another country, and it's really stressing us out that basically they give us kind of no choice. They give us a choice, like you could get vaccines or not, but there's sort of really no choice. I forgot what the repercussions are, but they make it problematic to not get vaccines. But that was like one thing I want to ask you about. But while I was on hold, I heard you talking about Central Park and children and playing outside. And I just feel like this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I just want to throw this out there that for the last 15 years, I've been working with a lot of one percenters and getting a lot of very selfish people rich. And I have ideas that literally have the wow factor and can change the world in a positive way. And I want to know if outside of this, I could email you or talk to you.
Sure can. I'm happy to, and that's a good idea. Remember, the fact that someone is wealthy, 1% or 1,000 1%er, does not in and of itself make them a bad person or immoral. It just makes them successful. It's what a person does with their success that will either move us because they thought about us or the disadvantaged. And anytime someone is successful and they share that success, and they are people who are generally very smart and well-driven, they can get behind a good project and make it work. So I'm all for that. You can share anything with me privately by going to prnstudio@gmail.com. All right. And as to the question of being married and to a person from another country and being told that she must take her vaccines, there's two ways of approaching it. First, you're going to hear very shortly, in about 10 minutes, you're going to hear two women who could help specifically on this, because one's a professor of law and one of the smartest people I know in the United States on vaccines. And there are attorneys. And if you simply send an email, we would put you in touch with some vaccine exemption attorneys, including one in New York. And that way you can get the legal help you need. And there are rights people have, even if the people in the media say you don't have those rights. In point of fact, we have found that people do. They're just not aware of them. All right. So all the best, and thank you for calling in, Ivan. Now I'm going to go to part two of an original in-depth investigation. And yesterday, from Helen, I talked about, and she's a citizen activist and a really good journalist, does her homework. I presented part one of her story, but also I mentioned that she had spent a lot of time interviewing me, asking for documents, and my legal department gave her a huge amount of information where I had been attacked, and I had responded to these attacks on Wikipedia, where there's nothing but misinformation, with the using playing by their rules, showing that the people like Stephen Barrett and other people totally discredited, they should never have allowed them to write anything. And I wanted to be removed from there. Or I wanted to debate them. And they refused all that. They just, no matter what was done to change an inaccuracy, they changed it back. So we knew something was up, and this sent up a red flag. And we began a 2-year in-depth investigative report. This is Helen, on her own volition, did this part. Yesterday I mentioned some of the people, the famous people like Vandana Shiva and others who had been attacked. And no matter what they did, no matter how many people tried to change their edits to be more accurate, it was not done. That means the fix is in. Quote, this is from Helen. We began by invalidating the article's primary source as unreliable per Wikipedia's own rules, Quackwatch, the personal website of discredited ex-psychiatrist Stephen Barrett, is cited no less than 8 times in Knoll's biography, even though as a self-published personal website, it meets none of the standards of Wikipedia's reliable sources policy. Barrett has spent most of his life railing against alternative medicine on his various websites, and his bias is so persistent that it has been called out in a court decision. He was totally discredited by the court. So he also violates Wikipedia's neutral point of view policy. Wikipedia's policy on biographies of living persons mandates editors, quote, remove contentious material that is unsourced or poorly sourced, end quote. Yet when we tried to do so, we were unequivocally and rudely rebuffed. Other sources used in the article included Salons.com book review titled Quack Record, in which the author, Peter Kirsch, states in the opening paragraph that, quote, he can't be impartial about Gary Knoll's book, end quote. Another source that must be struck for failure to adhere to their policies. When we finally did find a reliable source, the Time magazine article, The New Mr. Natural, it does not include the information for which it is used as a source. And the rest of the sentence is not even sourced, suggesting that the article was written or copy-pasted first and sourced haphazardly later to lend the appearance of legitimacy. Another false allegation follows, citing 2 articles, neither of which supports the false statement that Knoll was hospitalized as a result of consuming his own supplement, an inaccurate statement clearly written to defame Gary Knoll, conspicuously placed in the introductory paragraph where it would not belong in any case, even if it were true, being at most a minor footnote to Knoll's 4-decade career. As an aside, I was contacted by every newspaper you could imagine, New York Times, New York Post, Los Angeles Times, all wanting to know what was the story. But they all had talking points, and they were all identical. And so I refused to talk with any of them, because I knew that no matter what I said to any of them, they would not use it, because I don't trust them. Here is the facts. I was never hospitalized because of any product. That's a lie. I wasn't even sickened by any product. That's a lie. In fact, a small number, about 100 bottles of a new product I was creating, was sent out. We got a few people saying that they didn't feel well. We immediately withdrew those, went to their houses in taxicabs and cars, so nobody was hurt. And we actually contacted the FDA. We didn't have to. We did. And what had happened was, Someone said that, oh, Gary Knoll's hurt himself with his own product. That is an absolute lie. I told the audience I was fine. They conflated 2 issues. One issue was I was training and did the World Games. And to do that, I have to train hard. Just like in the movie Rocky, that's how hard the training if you want to compete with the best athletes in the world in the World Games. And that means going out for a 3-hour run in the afternoon in Florida. It means working out 2 hours in the gym. And when you do that, you're going to be tired, your feet are going to frequently be blistered, and if you're not hydrated fully, you could even pass a few drops of blood. So it's a message, you're not drinking enough water, hydrate. And I told someone in my office, I said, you know, I'm tired, I'm exhausted from my training. And I went on to win the gold medal. And then they felt that that's was because I had vitamin D. There's no study in the world literature, and we got every study there was showing that vitamin D is not going to cause any major problems, period. But boy, did the Quack Watch and everyone get a hold of that. And also, it was not my company that manufactured the product, a company I'd never heard of, didn't even know existed. It was an FDA-approved company that made the product. So my question is this, and I still had this question to this day. Was it industrial sabotage to increase the amount of vitamin D beyond what I had on the label? And why wasn't I ever given the assays to prove that? So there's a big mystery. We know industrial sabotage exists. We know it's done all the time. Was it in my case? I don't know. But I was given misinformation. No one was hurt. I was not hurt. I told my radio audience I was fine. I was just exhausted because of training 6 to 8 hours a day, every day, in order to be the best I could be, which was the best in the world with our team, We won the 20K in Barcelona, Spain, and won it before that in Puerto Rico and then in Eugene, Oregon. So you see, it was all lies. But you wouldn't know that if you read Wikipedia or heard the quack people putting out all this misinformation. But the next paragraph cites Barrett's biography of Knoll as the source of negative information about Knoll's alma mater, the Union Institute. And even though the Barrett website does not contain any information about Union's alleged dissolution, it's not. It's there doing great. Or its PhD program, it is unknown where this information originates. If it was made up out of whole cloth, or if the editor who added it merely neglected to include their source, but in any case, it flagrantly violates Wikipedia's policies on multiple levels. A later paragraph cites the Time and Salon pieces as sources for Knoll's alleged statements that, quote, HIV is harmless and does not cause AIDS. I've never said that. And to the contrary, I've treated 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS and actually reversed AIDS, something they've never been able to do. The only thing I did was I invited people on my program who questioned the legitimacy of saying that HIV by itself would cause 20 different diseases. And they had a forum. I believe in open forums. These are distinguished men and women of science, and they should be allowed to say what they have to say. You could agree or disagree. And they published in peer-reviewed literature their findings, that it's multifactorial. In any case, something he has never said, quote, he has never said this, which even these pieces do not claim he said. Repetition does not create veracity. The article then brings in Seth Kalachem's to compare Knoll to a Holocaust denier, ironically accusing him of, quote, cashing in on HIV/AIDS, end quote, despite the fact not mentioned anywhere in Knoll's Wikipedia article, yet important to any unbiased assessment of Knoll's work, that Gary Knoll has never charged anyone a penny, including all the AIDS patients he has treated. Kalachem's source for his evaluation of Knoll, Stephen Barrett. Kalachin's own dubious history should be to disqualify him from opining on anyone else's credibility, and is worth considering whether his history of assuming fake identities might extend to Wikipedia's editing. The article frames Knoll's fundraising activities on PBS negatively, deliberately misattributing to Knoll a statement about quacks and charlatans made in reference to a Deepak Chopra special on spiritual healing. Blogger and journalism professor Keith Clore is quoted about Knoll's documentary, quote, Seeds of Death, that's about my program on genetic engineering. Though he is not an expert in the scientific field and his opinions are therefore irrelevant to a serious discussion of Knoll's work. The article then devotes an entire subheading to claims about an incorrectly manufactured supplement. I just mentioned that. And his so-called documentaries, they only mention two, quote, are self-produced and low budget, end quote. Now I'll stop right there because I want to give time to our guest. Fact, I'm the only student in the history of Union Graduate School known for graduating PhDs in psychology and in education to have a multidisciplinary program, the only one before or since. I'm the only graduate in the history of Union Graduate School to be given 2 years after I graduated in a surprise reception in New York, an outstanding alumni in the history of the university. No other student before or since has received that. Gee whiz. There are a lot of magna cum laude, summa cum laude, and valedictorians, and they deserve the respect that their hard work earned. Yet I'm the only student in the history of a university with tens of thousands of graduates, some prominent presidents of universities that got the highest honor, not a word about any of this. And you talk about my documentaries. Let's go head-to-head with Michael Moore or anyone else that's made documentaries. Look at the awards I win. They don't mention that, do they? Not one of them. They don't mention the quality of the film festivals. And I produce my own documentaries. Therefore, I don't charge as the writer, director, and producer. I don't have to go for funds like Michael and the other people because I'm not the star of my documentaries. The theme is I don't need my ego stroked by having every other word about me. Part 3 tomorrow. Now it's time to go over and say hello to our guests who are standing by patiently. Thank you very much. Kim Mack Rosenberg and Professor Mary Holland. Professor Holland is a director of the Graduate Legal Skills Program at New York University School of Law, specializing in international human rights and public law and vaccine safety law and injury compensation. She also has a son who regressed into autism following the MMR vaccine. She has degrees in Russian studies from Harvard, a graduate degree in international relations, and a JD from Columbia University, where she had also taught international law at its law school. Mary is co-author of The Vaccine Epidemic, about corporate greed and bad science behind the vaccine industry. And her most recent book, co-authored with our other guest, is The HPV Vaccine Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. And by the way, in my opinion, it's the most concise book behind the history and adverse effects of the human papilloma vaccine, such as Gardasil, and with a preface from the Nobel Prize winning winner in medicine for discovering, not co-discovering, discovering the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I'd like to begin by briefly reading some passages from the professor's preface, because this is a world-renowned virologist who received the Nobel Prize in Medicine for the discovery of HIV, and I've had him on this program before, and he alone, I actually had Peter Agochi, are among the few doctors and researchers within the medical establishment with, in my opinion, the moral background to say this, quote, "This book is an accurate description of facts occurring in our time. A promising vaccine against a virus involved in cervical cancer turns out to be the source of extremely grave side effects, even death, of young girls and boys. The side effects are underreported by medical personnel, while there's a growing number of parents suffering, suing manufacturers and governments for inducing lifelong handicaps and death of loved ones. This is a tragic example of various segments of our society worldwide placing economic interests before the health and protection of the younger generation. What this vaccine is doing to thousands of our young worldwide is a crime," end quote. So quite simply, for both of you, please, the HIV the HPV vaccine is a dreadful vaccine that should never have been approved, let alone launched on the public. And yet it was fast-tracked through the FDA bureaucracy. And there are several points I know you'll want to get across, so let's address those. First, we are constantly told by federal health authorities, vaccine makers, and pediatricians, and the general medical practitioners that these vaccines are perfectly safe. And if they are safe, then the clinical trials should show that without any question of doubt, they're safe, do they? If there is doubt, even without knowing the exact causative factor for serious adverse effects or injury, then vaccines should get thrown back at the corporations to retest and reevaluate. So that is what true science is about, retesting hypotheses when there is uncertainty and doubt. But vaccine science is today a pseudoscience, in my opinion. Please address this concern each in turn. Mary, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I just want to mention you're reading the preface from Dr. Montagnier. We are so proud that the Nobel Prize winner for discovering the HIV virus would think so highly of our book. And although we are not ourselves physicians or scientists, we have some of the leading world experts related to this vaccine and autoimmunity and aluminum science who've endorsed the book. So we really are very, very proud of that. As to the clinical trials, I completely agree with you, Gary. If vaccines are completely safe and effective, then the clinical trials must show that. And we believe that the clinical trials here were fatally flawed. They did not prove safety or efficacy against cancer. And I want to turn it over to Kim for more details.
Thank you, Mary. Yes. So, Gary, we point out in the book several flaws in the clinical trials, but one of the biggest and most obvious flaws that many people are unaware of is that, like many other vaccines, the HPV vaccine in the clinical trials was not tested against a true saline placebo. In fact, for almost all the participants in the trials, they received an aluminum-containing adjuvant. In the case of Gardasil, it was the adjuvant that was in the vaccine. In the case of Cervarix, the Glaxo product, they used hepatitis A vaccines and aluminum hydroxide, which was only part of the adjuvant used in their product. There was a small number of children in the Gardasil trial who received what is called a carrier solution, which is also not a saline placebo. It contains ingredients such as polysorbate 80 and sodium borate, both of which have science showing that they cause potential reproductive risks and other risks of harm. So there is no safety study showing that the vaccines are safe against a true placebo. We use the term focebos to describe those placebos, those supposed placebos in our book. They're also...
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. There also is really serious questions about how the adverse events are reported and recorded in the clinical trials, and whether some adverse events were treated as what they called new medical conditions and were assumed sort of out of the gate to not be related to the vaccine at all and not investigated thoroughly. And finally, as Mary pointed out, it's never been shown that these vaccines will prevent a single case of cancer. The endpoints in the clinical trials were cervical lesions, the vast majority of which regress on their own. Even the most serious cervical lesions, we have very solid science that we cite in the book to show that approximately half of those will regress on their own if they get as far as that serious level of CIN3.
Okay, for both of you again, it is not just vaccines that are being developed and launched for which there is no real humanitarian need for them, but also many drugs. In my personal opinion, this is about profit rather than health. And as you write, the HPV vaccine has never been proven to prevent any cancers of any kind. And even the developer of the vaccine has made that statement. So provide us with some of the proof in this statement, because many people who may recognize Gardasil as unsafe, they still believe it prevents cervical cancer in women and genital warts in both genders.
So Gary, as you point out, there's certainly a story about money here. The HPV vaccines are currently garnering $2.5 billion a year, and the projections are that that will increase steadily over the next decade. So this is about money. This is a moneymaker. And one of the things that's really important for people to understand is that even the vaccine makers tell people you still have to get cervical screening, or you still have to be attentive that you could develop cancer. The vaccine, even though the marketing suggests that, you know, one and done, you know, be one less, you never have to think about this again, the fine print says, no, you have to keep screening. And screening in the developed world, cervical screening, has been proven to reduce incidence of cervical full-blown cancer and of deaths by up to 80% with almost no side effects. So what's the need for the vaccine in the developed world? In the developing world, where cervical cancer is still a killer, regrettably, there are many other alternatives besides this vaccine, which is the most expensive vaccine on the market.
All right.
And just
additional thoughts,
Mary,
please.
Said, sure. To add to what Mary said, what people may not realize, because this is sold, as she said, you know, you can be one less and prevent cervical cancer or prevent other cancers, is that the vaccines provide, to the extent they provide protection, against a limited number of types of HPV. There are approximately 200 types of HPV that have been identified to date, and Gardasil 9, which has the largest number of strains in it, protects against 7 strains that are thought to be associated with cancer and 2 that are associated with warts. And that's why continued screening for women, for example, is still critically important.
But you wouldn't know whether or not it was protecting you from cervical cancer for decades.
That's correct.
That's right.
Generally, cervical cancer takes 15 to 30 years to develop.
And we know that by proper use of pap smears and proper hygiene and regular checkups, that a person could be considered less at risk if they're getting proper obstetrician investigations on their body. And why aren't we advocating that instead of this dangerous vaccine?
We discussed that at length, Gary. We certainly think that screening is the alternative, and that really wasn't looked at by the FDA thoroughly and isn't really in the advertising. The alternative to the vaccine is screening, and it's safe and it's proven.
I would agree. And also, let us remember that we know that the CDC's VAERS database of vaccine injuries direly underreports the actual number of vaccine adverse effects. I interviewed the former commissioner of the FDA, Kessler, and he acknowledged that adverse drug reactions, including vaccines, could be 98 or 99% of actual adverse effects. So what we're actually seeing is not an honest and realistic appraisal of the danger of these vaccines.
That's right. I mean, our view is that it's about 1%. This is based on Health and Human Services evidence, 1% of adverse events are reported. And yet, within that VAERS system reporting adverse events, the HPV vaccine in that age group that gets the HPV, it has the highest rate of adverse events. And that's not just in the U.S. Also, the European system comparably has a higher rate of adverse events from the HPV vaccine. And we have cases all over the world, Gary, where young adults, you know, adolescents are developing permanent injuries or dying shortly after receiving this vaccine. And it's important that the listeners know that one case that went 8 years through the vaccine injury compensation program, because the vaccine manufacturers have almost blanket liability protection when the federal government endorses and recommends a vaccine. But in that program, one death was attributed, it was found that Gardasil caused the girl's death. It was appealed, it came back, and the Department of Justice and HHS did not appeal that decision. In other words, they were afraid, presumably, that on appeal, they would lose. So Gardasil has been proven in a court of law based on science and medicine to cause a death by heart attack in a young woman. And that case is Tarsell, T-A-R-S-E-L-L, versus the Secretary of Health and Human Services. People need to know that. It's been proven to cause death.
People need to know that there's over 120 countries at last count that is using this drug, and they need to read the book. Here is the book, everyone. Please write it down and then read it. The HPV Vaccine Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. The authors, co-authors, Professor Mary Holland, J.D., and Kim Mack Rosenberg, J.D. Thank you both very much. I appreciate you being on and look forward to another conversation.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank the good work of Helen Byninsky and part three of her original in-depth investigative report will be on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.
Shame, the way you mess around with the man, it's a shame.